Hello and welcome to Audio Reader's Sports Show. My name's Jane Woods. Today we'll start our program with current articles from Sports Illustrated. Today's first article is by Chris Ballard on January 18th. Post-play is a lost art in the NBA. What happens to those who still believe in it? For generations, giants ruled the blocks. Today, post-play is an afterthought. But there remain a few who preach the forgotten craft and seek its return. In the summer of 2009, shortly after winning his fourth championship with the Lakers, Kobe Bryant flew from L.A. to Houston. From there, he headed an hour west by car, past exurbs and strip malls, and into rolling farmland. A winding road brought him to a set of iron gates and, just down the way, a gymnasium. Inside awaited the man Kobe had crossed the country to see, a man Bryant believed could take his game to the next level. Hakeem Olajuwon had retired 7 years earlier, after winning two titles and an MVP award with the Rockets. Though a dominant defensive force, he was perhaps best known for his graceful post moves, a series of spins, feints, and fadeaways that caught defenders wrong-footed, leaving them trying to defend a man who had, in a split second, vanished. His signature shimmy even gained its own nickname, the Dream Shake. After retiring, Olajuwon had purchased a 400-acre ranch near Katy, Texas, and converted a livestock barn into a state-of-the-art gym with a full-length NBA court. The gym soon became something of a mecca for lead-footed big men. Coaches and NBA general managers called, beseeching Olajuwon to tutor one of their centers. Such was demand, it is said, that teams paid up to tens of thousands of dollars per session. In Kobe's case, he tracked down Olajuwon after the Lakers played the Rockets in Houston. "I want to come out this summer and work with you," Bryant said. At first, Olajuwon couldn't tell whether Kobe was serious. "But this is Kobe we're talking about." Yes, he was very, very serious. And so later that year, Bryant stood under the basket in Olajuwon's gym, listening as Hakeem covered the subtleties of the craft, how to feel a defender's presence and react to the slightest weight imbalance, how to jump when catching the entry pass so that even before landing, you're already on the move. How to use footwork and agility to build moves, much like how a boxer constructs a combination, jabbing and misdirecting. Bryant caught on quickly. "Fastest learner I ever coached," Olajuwon says, and began deploying the moves that fall. 2 years later, LeBron James flew out and stayed for 3 days of instruction, hoping to learn how to punish small players on the block. Olajuwon didn't charge Kobe or LeBron. That the two best players on the planet would travel to the farmland of Texas to train under Olajuwon, seekers ascending Drop Step Mountain to see the guru at the top, tells you just how valuable these skills once were. But that was more than a decade ago. And a decade is an eternity in NBA time. At first, slowly, and then all at once, the game evolved, migrating ever farther from the basket. Seven-footers left the trenches to roam the perimeter, launch threes, and create off the dribble. Modern bigs aspired to be Kevin Durant, not Kevin McHale. Few people called Olajuwon. Now, he says, nobody posts up anymore. Indeed, the most prolific post-up teams today, like the Nuggets and the 76ers, attempt only six or so shots per game from the block, or half as many as the league average team in 2010. Meanwhile, even the least prolific three-point shooting teams today, the ones that are generally pretty terrible at it, like the Lakers, launch 30 threes per game. Some, perhaps most, would say this isn't such a bad thing, that the current pace and space league is an upgrade over watching centers methodically backing down defenders. Like the typewriter giving way to the keyboard, or the landline to the cell phone. But with all the evolutions, something is also lost. Sometimes it's just a nuance, the satisfying metallic clack of an old-fashioned typewriter. Other times it's an entire culture or a language. So what now becomes of the post-game and the true believers who still teach it and preach it? I flew to Houston to find out what it's like to watch something you love fade away. In early November, I made the same drive Kobe and LeBron once did, following I-10 West from the city. Olajuwon has generally kept a low profile these past years, and his name is rarely mentioned anymore. The referent points are fewer. After all, we see echoes of Magic, Michael, and Larry in today's game. But Hakeem? He's like a relic from another era. And there's a photograph of Hakeem Olajuwon at age 59. He once dominated with a wide array of post moves. Now he says, nobody posts up. The photograph is courtesy of Darren Carroll of Sports Illustrated. It shows a close-up of Hakeem, a profile of his face with one hand underneath of his chin resting on a basketball. He's wearing a large watch and a silver ring on his pinky finger as he looks into the camera. He's wearing a black shirt and has a very solemn and peaceful expression on his face. It may be hard to envision today, in a time of Victor Wembanyama's and Bulbul's, but eons ago, the Pleistocene age of the NBA, big men ruled from the block. Back then, a coach's job was simple. Send your giant as close to the basket as possible, then supply the ball. So dominant was George McCann that the NBA doubled the width of the key from 6 to 12 feet in 1951. A decade later, the league added 4 feet in hopes of slowing Wilt Chamberlain, who was 2 seasons removed from averaging 50 points. Not for a stretch of games, but for the season, while rarely attempting a shot outside of 8 feet. The ploy worked, sort of. His scoring average dropped to only 34.7 points per game. Chamberlain's successor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, set the all-time scoring record largely by unfurling one graceful skyhook after another. The same song, on repeat, for an entire career. During one stretch ending in 1980, a back-to-basket center won the league MVP in 20 out of 21 seasons. It was Oscar Robertson who heroically bucked the tide in 1964. Because of this, teams ruthlessly vied for talented centers and took chances on untalented ones, hoping they might pan out. As the saying went, you can't teach height. But you can teach post moves, and during that era, one man became the oracle of the post. Pete Newell didn't intend to take on the mantle, it just sort of happened. A Navy man during World War II, he became a decorated coach, leading the U.S. to the 1960 Olympic gold, and racking up victories at Cal. Such was his intensity that in season, Newell subsisted on what seemed like a little more than coffee and cigarettes, regularly dropping 20 pounds. Doctors told him he'd die young if he kept it up, so after a stint as the Lakers' GM, he retired and instead started tutoring players informally, beginning with 2 forwards, Kermit Washington of the Lakers and Kiki Vandewig, then at UCLA. The workouts were unlike any either man had ever experienced. For 3 years at a time, during the summer, in a gym in L.A., Newell provided a crash course in the dark arts of post play, reframing a physical game as a mental one. He taught that players were not just right-handed or left-handed, but also right-footed or left-footed. He explained that basketball is a game of counters, and there's a counter to everything. As long as you waited for your opportunity, it would present itself. Sounds simple, but it takes a little while to get the idea, says Van de Wijk. Word got out. In the years that followed, others called upon Newell. Bill Walton, James Worthy, Bernard King. Even Abdul-Jabbar came, hoping for help. Defenders were sitting on his left shoulder, waiting for the skyhook, so Newell helped him fashion a new counter, a left-handed hook. Even if Abdul-Jabbar shot at only 5% of the time, that would be enough to give defenders pause. And here there's an inset of an NBA photograph, courtesy of Getty Images. NBA big men used to rule from the block, but the game has moved farther from the basket. And in the game, you see probably seven players under the basket, while one Laker goes up on his left foot with his right hand extended for a skyhook. In time, Newell formalized his approach into Pete Newell's big man camp, which he held for 3 decades. Newell never made money. It was his way of giving back to the game, says Pete Newell Jr., his eldest son, a decorated high school coach. If you were an NBA GM and had a big gangly draft pick, you made damn sure you sent him to Pete. Same went for the stars, including Olajuwon, whom Newell deemed one of his best students. When Shaq arrived, he was frustrated that defenders pushed him before the catch, so Newell taught him a counter, spinning to the baseline. Patrick Ewing famously refused to go to the big man camp, despite the Knicks' pleas, and New York sports writers later wondered if that was why he never developed elite interior post moves. In the year 2000, the National Association of Basketball Coaches began handing out the Pete Newell Big Man Award to the top collegiate front court player. The following year, Newell ran his first tall women's basketball camp. Even in Newell's late 80s, resourceful parents like Deborah Ledford, the mother of high school seven-footers Brooke and Robin Lopez, came calling, driving from Fresno to L.A. seeking tutelage for her sons. Even so, the game was already changing. 3 years before Newell died in 2008, at age 93, he lamented to the L.A. Times that a generation was being overcoached but undertaught. One wonders what he'd think of the era that ensued. Exactly how and why the postgame vanished is a matter of debate. Some go back to the addition of the three-point line in 1979, originally installed as another anti-big man measure. Others point to the long-term effect of rule modifications. Tired of low-scoring wrestling matches, the NBA in 1994 began strictly enforcing existing hand-checking measures on the perimeter. Now, a wing like Michael Jordan could attack without an enforcer's grappling hooks in his hips, but a big with his back turned, you could still maul him, says Jeff Van Gundy, who coached a succession of top centers, from Patrick Ewing to Yao Ming to Dikembe Mutombo. 8 years later in 2002, the NBA went one step further and legalized zone defense, effectively eliminating a post player's airspace. Whereas coaches once had to choose whether to send a hard double team on the catch, now help D could float nearby or sandwich a big before he even got the ball. Even the most basic post-entry pass became perilous. Then, of course, there's the Dirkification of the game. That's spelled D-I-R-K, as in Dirk Nowitzki. That traces all the way back to FIBA's super-wide trapezoidal lane, forcing American bigs away from the hoop. As you can see from the history of basketball, it's largely a history of penalizing tall people for being tall. This encouraged international bigs to learn the game by facing up, away from the basket, and thus Dirk Nowitzki, Bigat, Kristaps Porzingis, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Nikola Jokic. Sure. You may be thinking, but we all know what really killed the post-up. The stake through its old school heart. NBA teams finally did the math. 3 is greater than 2. Hoops analytics may have begun on the fringe, espoused by Caltech grads like Dean Oliver, and tracked in spare bedrooms by hobbyists like Roland Beach. But by the mid-2010s, the revolution was complete. Three-pointers and free throws were the new holy grail. Mid-range shots and post moves were anathema. By 15 Grantland, Zach Lowe was asking whether, in its zeal, to make the game more exciting, quote, the league inadvertently killed the back-to-the-basket game, end quote. No player's career better illustrates that sea change than that of Newell's former pupil, Brook Lopez. First at Stanford, and then with the Nets in the early 2010s, Lopez starred on the block, deploying an array of soft half hooks and bank shots. For the first 8 years of his NBA career, Lopez scored 20 a game while rarely, if ever, attempting a three-pointer. I absolutely love posting up, Lopez says. Then in the summer, before the 16-17 season, Nets coach Kenny Atkinson told him to start practicing his threes. That season, Lopez launched 5 threes a game, or 2 more than Larry Bird did in any year of his career. Lopez adapted and survived, but often struggled. Rip Greg Monroe's NBA career. The Warriors asked bigs not to post up, but to set screens, roll, and become pocket passers, preaching, quote, on time, on target, end quote. Centers who couldn't shoot became a liability, as did those who couldn't guard on the perimeter on a switch, leaving them marooned against the likes of Trae Young and Steph Curry, launching 26-footers off the dribble. By 2019, The Ringer declared, quote, the post-op is deader than dead in the NBA, end quote. Spacing became the new currency of the league. Everyone needed to be able to shoot. It's like mining for gold or going after oil, said Bucks assistant coach Mike Dunlap. Everyone's fighting for more space to operate because the players are so quick and long. Dunlap has a unique perspective. He got his start helping Newell at his workouts in the early 1980s, bringing towels for Washington and Vandewick, then stuck with the coach through the big man camps. Dunlap is as close as there comes to a living disciple of Newell, not named Newell. And yet now he coaches Lopez and Giannis, two prime examples of the game's evolution. The game used to be east-west, he says. Now it's north-south. This is not to say skilled post-op players don't still exist in the NBA. It's just the teams don't give them many opportunities. This season, only one player, Jokic, has posted up more than 5 times per game. To find other post-op specialists, you often need to look down to the end of a team's bench. We see you, Kenneth Lofton Jr. Or more often, to its guards, in particular, Jalen Brunson and Marcus Smart. They're good at exploiting mismatches. For the most part, though, the post-op is, as Van Gundy says, dying a pretty quick death. Whereas guards like Kobe once hoped to acquire the skills of big men, now big men, such as Joel Embiid, seek out training gurus like Drew Hanlon, a former collegiate point guard, to help them play like Kobe. Every summer you see footage of lumbering NBA bigs like DeMarcus Cousins and Steven Adams launching threes. The upshot, as Van Gundy says, kids are being taught this idea of positionless basketball, and they're not being taught how to play in the low post. And why would you want them to learn it? The 6'6" high school post player may score a ton of points, but by playing on the block, he also effectively hurts his chances of playing in college and beyond, where he'll likely need to move to the perimeter. This feeds into a continuous cycle, as Newell Jr. sees it. Players today don't recognize how to play and pass to the post. Why not? Because they're not taught. And why aren't they taught? Because no one wants to or knows how to teach it anymore. Most coaches across the sport today were perimeter players when they played, so they can't see the game through the center's eyes. Indeed, ask around, and there's no Pete Newell Sr. as of today. This is not surprising. Supply and demand, etc. If the Warriors post up twice a game, the pace they're at this season, why would they focus on teaching it? There is, of course, one guru who does remain. At 11 a.m., Olajuwon meets me at the gate to his ranch in a black SUV and leads the way down a cracked driveway past a chicken coop to his gym. Inside, mementos fill glass cases in the foyer. Not far from plaque with Quranic verses and Olajuwon finds inspiring. Raised in Nigeria, he rededicated himself to Islam in the early 1990s and maintains a second home in Amman, Jordan. To the left is a sort of press row with stools and a long table. To the right, men's and women's locker rooms. At age 59, Olajuwon is fit and trim, and his hair is shorn close to the scalp. His laugh, deep and warm. There's a lightness to him. He's a gracious host and, to my surprise alone, no assistant or helper, just Akeem, his gym, and a cooler of drinks that he brought. Olajuwon leads the way across the court to a pair of chairs. We start at the beginning. How he grew up playing handball, soccer, and table tennis. How a basketball coach at Lagos State recruited him and then pointed to the paint and said, "That is your jurisdiction," a dictate he took to heart. Back then, Olajuwon says, a big man was like the police. When you're driving on the freeway and all of a sudden you see someone check the speed limit and everyone slows down and then you see the police car and you go, okay, that's the shot blocker. He pauses. From the University of Houston, he joined the Rockets. He worked with Newell and learned to take advantage of his quickness and agility. He developed counters to his counters. Upon retiring, he began teaching. A host of players came through. Okafor, Gortat, Rudy Gay, Dwight Howard, Stoudemire. He says working with Kobe was especially gratifying. He loved the post. He said any time he's playing, he's beating the big guys to the post. And they say, "Get out of my post," and they push him out, but he wants to stay there. Because of Bryant's skill and footwork, the pair could jump straight to advanced moves. The following season, Kobe executed one flawlessly when the Lakers played in Houston, shaking free of Shane Battier for a fadeaway and then winking at Olajuwon, who was courtside. A photo courtesy of Greg Nelson shows two players under the basket while a Heat player is trying to take it to the basket. Post moves were once so integral that stars like James sought tutelage. As for James, he showed up months after losing in the 2011 finals with the Heat. "What was lacking in his game was the post," says Olajuwon. I told him he should use his leverage, just muscle and seal against guards. James started at the beginning, but Olajuwon says he level-jumped in 3 days. It was a joy to work with guys like that, who are already great on their own and want to add to their game. These days, Olajuwon trains only Rocket players, part of an exclusive deal he signed with the team. At practice, and as time permits, he tutors those interested, including 6'11 center Alperen Sengun. That means he watches today's stars from afar, and he sees the possibilities. Take Embiid. Olajuwon likes him and has given him advice, but he has questions. "He's got all the moves, but leveraging. The move is different. Why would he be shooting threes? Olajuwon asks. He has the advantage every night, and if I have the advantage, I'm going to wear you out. But threes? That's settling. When I'm tired, I settle. You don't settle when you're trying to win. You don't start the game settling. Olajuwon loves watching Golden State. That ball's moving. And Curry in particular. But he also wonders what would happen if they had to face any real big men. Golden State's system works well. And why? Because nobody's punishing them, he says. They have Draymond Green guarding the real bigs. He's really a small forward. It's too much of a mismatch. They score three, you score two right back, and if they miss, we still get two. Olajuwon imagines Shaq today and lights up. He'd be a monster. Who's going to stop him? I received a similar reaction from Van Gundy, who calls Shaq the greatest distorter of defenses who ever played, as well as his brother Stan, who coached Shaq in Orlando. Next is Giannis, whom Olajuwon generally loves, but oh, the missed opportunities. He brings up a recent game when Antetokounmpo spun baseline for a dunk. Beautiful move, the Dream assesses. But the step was not right. The idea was right, but it was successful. But he spun from the wrong leg. This, Olajuwon says, is the next level, one hidden to most, like a secret stage in a real-life video game. The next time Giannis makes that move, Olajuwon explains, the defender might know it's coming. And then, Giannis won't get by on athleticism, but spin off the left foot. We head out to the court so Olajuwon can demonstrate. I've recruited a former collegiate and overseas center as a workout partner. At 6'7 and 235 pounds, Tom Poser is built for inside banging. But that's not the only reason I've asked him to come. Poser came of age during the heyday of post-play as a tall, skilled teenager in San Anselmo, California in the 1980s.